Hey Tor, it's me again. Listen, Jollibee went outside and now he's on a date with a pineapple from the fruit stand across the street. They're in a karaoke bar singing along to Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. None of this makes sense. Hey Jollibee, fruits aren't sentient.
Well, I finally made my way the whole way across the country. Here I am in Philly, as you can see. It is a 98-degree evening. Humidity makes it feel like 110, and I really hope I can get out of this heat soon. And I just want to find Jollibee.
Hey, are you Tor from Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities?
You're filming me filming. Yeah, you're Caleb from Classywell, right?
That is indeed me. And you know what? Your durian was just setting up a printing press in my living room to print counterfeit Ethiopian currency.
Oh, well, you know what they say, cash printer go burr. Oh, look at that. Oh.
Yeah, I lured Jollibee into this bag with a tater tot hot dish. So,
here you go. Well, that is his weakness. Okay, thank you so much. Yeah. All right, well, how do we get back home? Can we get on a bus or something?
Well, since you're here in Philly, I heard it through the grapevine that you want to do a story relating to trolley buses. And I'll have you know that we have the only trolley bus network in the eastern United States.
So that's pretty cool.
Let's go ride it and pretend that time jump to a full daylight scene was on purpose.
Yeah, that was totally intended. Yeah. Welcome. Don't ever run away again.
Interurban.
Some kind of train, something. And they have trolley buses. The only East Coast city that has electric buses that run from wires above the street. And that's what the three of us are on right now. Almost everyone loves them.
I hate the bus!
But there's one guy who loves the trolley buses quite a bit more than your average Philly commuter. And that's one hell of a story. I'm your host, Tor Parsons. This, at long last found on the other side of the country on this sizzling hot day, is my co-host, Jollibee the Durian, and welcome to a collaborative episode of Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities.
Featuring Classy Whale.
On like subways and stuff, and on trains and in public places in China, and all of Southeast Asia, say don't bring a durian here. Don't eat durian here in public.
There aren't a lot of places less similar than Switzerland and Philadelphia, but one thing they share are trolley buses, electric city buses that draw power from overhead wires. It should come as no surprise to you that Switzerland, a country similar in size and population to Massachusetts, has over three times more active trolley bus systems than the US. All their major cities have them, and some small towns do as well. The US has just four. In Philadelphia, Seattle, San Francisco, and the real odd duck, Dayton, Ohio. But as ubiquitous as trolleybuses are in the land of neutrality, milk, and hotels, no Swiss city is as proud of its trolleybuses as Lausanne. Lausanne is the fourth biggest city in Switzerland and the second biggest in the French-speaking part of the country, after Geneva, which it's on the opposite side of Lake Geneva from. Despite that, Lausanne isn't that big. The city proper has a population of 140,000 people, smaller than my hometown of Eugene, Oregon, and it's famous among transit geeks first and foremost for being one of the smallest cities in the world with a complete metro system. Interestingly, this isn't the first time I've mentioned Lausanne on this channel, because it happens to be the home of the Musée d'Art Brut, which is one of the world's largest collections of outsider art and where some of the paintings of Augustin Lesage ended up. Remember that episode? The Musée d'Art Brut becomes relevant in this episode too, just you wait. Lausanne's metro is a curiosity of its own. It's not just the smallest city with a metro, but also features possibly the steepest inclines in the world on a conventional railroad. But if you ask someone from Lausanne about the city's transit, they're gonna think of the trolleybuses, which Lausanne is very proud of. Their trolleybus system is the largest and oldest in Switzerland, in fact, older than all but two trolleybus systems worldwide. Interestingly, both of which I've ridden, in Shanghai and Philadelphia. And in the 1980s, not only did Lausanne have its iconic trolleybuses, the trolleybuses had an iconic cheerleader. Martial Richaud was this man's name, although he preferred going by L'Homme Bus, Bus Man. At the time Richaud rose to stardom, he was in his 20s, although he'd been pushing his bus cart through the streets of Lausanne since he was 15. He was autistic and lived with his grandmother, collecting disability money from the generous Swiss welfare state. Richaud most likely never held a regular job in his life. He had more important things on his mind. As a kid, he dreamed of becoming a bus driver, but couldn't pass a driver's test. He settled on the next best thing, becoming a bus. Every day, almost all day, for years, Richaud could be found pushing an orange cart, the colors of Lausanne's real trolleybuses at the time, along a predetermined route, on a predictable schedule. The rotating drum display on the front of the bus indicated his final destination, or which line he was simulating. He made humming noises to imitate the bus speeding up and slowing down. Sometimes he'd engage in one-sided conversations with his regular passengers, a detailed, consistent, imagined cast of characters. As more people came to recognize him, they would play along, sometimes giving him money as their quote-unquote fare, assuming that Richaud's bus act was a clever form of panhandling. That really wasn't Richaud's intention, but either way, after a while, he really did have regular passengers. Richaud assembled his bus carts out of golf caddies, not full motorized golf carts, more like wheeled suitcases that hold a few golf clubs. Ultimately, he built a total of 7 bus carts, each one more elaborate and bus-like than the last. The first one was clearly just a golf caddy painted orange. As Richaud began to become popular with the city's real bus drivers, though, he gained access to more realistic parts. All the next bus carts incorporated a steering wheel salvaged from an actual bus. At the peak of his local fame, Richaud wore an authentic Lausanne bus driver's uniform, and his cart featured a windshield, a handmade, hand-cranked rotating drum display reading out the line number or destination, and even a real working air brake system. And of course, since these aren't just any buses but trolley buses, his carts had to have 2 trolley poles on them too, to connect to the overhead wires. The wires were quintessential to his passion for the trolleybus system. Some of Richaud's scheduled trolleybus routes followed real bus routes, but others were original creations where no real trolleybuses ran. Those needed wires. So, Richaud drew minutely detailed realistic trolleybus wires in chalk along the sidewalks where he pushed his cart. Richaud's chalk drawings became something of a local icon in themselves. In interviews, Richaud talked about the spiderweb-like beauty of the tangle of wires above Lausanne streets for the trolleybuses, and how he spent his childhood stretching wires between trees for his amusement. That's the thing, Richaud was very well-spoken and very lucid about his eccentricities. If you encountered him in any other context, you wouldn't believe he had any kind of disability. Hell, in the interviews I've seen of him, he's quite a bit less awkward and less visibly autistic than I am. He could run for office. I don't know if I could run for office, much as I aspire to do that someday. I don't think an average person is gonna say, yeah, I'd have a beer with Tor Parsons. You could have a beer with Martial Richaud. In an 18-minute documentary produced in 1983 by Lausanne filmmaker Michel Etter, Richaud has talked about how his bus carts were his second love in life, behind only Fabienne, a doll, who he called his girlfriend. He never took Fabienne out in public, and as far as I know, only ever allowed this one photo to be taken with her, recognizing and accepting that this was weird, and not the same wholesome kind of weird as his bus obsession. Lichaud did many interviews, cogently explaining in detail why he liked buses and trains and transit, and why he did what he did. Etter's documentary was broadcast on Swiss national TV, which got it picked up by French national TV and spread across the French-speaking world. Now, Lichaud was an icon, a cultural ambassador for both Lausanne and public transit. People came to Lausanne to meet him. Lichaud began being called an outsider artist, and hey, guess where one of the world's biggest collections of outsider art is located? Right in Lausanne. Michel Thévoz, the curator of the Musée d'Art Brut, took Lichaud under his wing. Lichaud let the museum have some of his orange bus carts that he didn't use anymore. They'd never partnered with an outsider artist like this before, while they were still making their art. In general, that's not common for an outsider artist like this, for them to be popular and recognized early on in their art-creating life. And then, in January 1986, Lichaud vanished. Without warning, he stopped showing up for his regular routes, and he would tell people if he were changing his route. His regular passengers were baffled, so were the bus drivers, who had come to see him as a mascot of their trade. Nobody seemed to know what had happened to him. After a few weeks, Michel Thévoz shocked Lausanne by revealing what had happened. Lichaud had been involuntarily committed to a mental hospital. According to Thévoz, it was for no greater crime than being endearingly weird in public. He described Lichaud's treatment as a slippery slope to le soft gulag, a phrase that was soon being repeated all over Lausanne. There was an outpouring of support for Busman. Newspapers ran the headline L'homme bus en panne, Busman breaks down. Punning on his first name, Martial, Marshall, the media cracked that he'd been court-martialed or put under martial law. A political cartoon showed a pair of trolley bus wires unexpectedly leading into the gates of a mental hospital. Dozens of local children signed a letter addressed both to Richaud's and to the judge who had ordered his institutionalization, demanding that he be released, or at least that Lausanne receive an explanation. There was the rub. An explanation. In the absence of one, sinister rumors began to spread. Journalists began trying to get to the bottom of Richaud's institutionalization, but everything about his case seemed to be bound by strict patient confidentiality laws. Everyone from Richaud's doctors, to the judge who'd gotten him committed, to the lawyer Richaud had hired to fight his involuntary commitment, insisted that no, he was not institutionalized just for being weird, but the real reason was a closely guarded secret. Everyone involved in the case reported the existence of a so-called secret dossier, which is what they all called it, detailing the reasons for Richaud's institutionalization. Thévoz wasn't allowed to see the dossier, comparing the situation to Franz Kafka's novel The Trial. Richaud's lawyer insisted he'd seen the secret dossier and it didn't include anything incriminating. Those at the mental hospital insinuated that there were things in the secret dossier that people of Lausanne wouldn't be happy to learn. Rumors began to circulate that Lichaud had gotten violent with strangers while doing his bus route. When asked about this specific allegation, one psychologist at the hospital darkly hinted that there had been incidents, although he refused to elaborate on what those incidents were. The rumor crystallized into something more specific. Lichaud had punched passersby who were making fun of him. Lausanne's bus drivers, many of whom were genuine friends of Lichaud by this point, insisted that even this wasn't a big deal and in fact was totally justified.
Je pense que s'il a donné des coups de poing comme c'est marqué là dans le journal, il aurait donné des coups de poing certainement parce que comme disaient d'autres collègues avant, c'est que ils l'ont cherché, certainement les gens ont profité et puis ils ont cherché les poings et puis voilà. Mais on aurait peut-être réagi la même chose nous, hein.
Or maybe Lichaud had punched his grandmother who took care of him. Richaud's landlord was interviewed and said he'd never heard of any disturbances involving him or his grandma, and all the neighbors loved having him around. The landlord had once forced Richaud to take down live electric wires that he'd installed on the ceiling of his apartment, which were scale models of the routes of Lausanne's trolleybus lines. Richaud understood and took them down without incident. The apartment was also apparently absolutely full of golf caddy carts, to the point that it was difficult to walk around in. Most of them weren't outfitted with bus features like his main cart, but they all represented individual buses. Different models of golf caddy stood in for different models of bus. Why? Well, because Richaud's apartment was where his bus returned to at the end of the day, after he'd done his routes. So it was a bus depot. What are there at bus depots? Other buses, of course. He had to have enough buses at his apartment to represent the rest of the Lausanne trolleybus fleet. Then the rumors got darker. Everyone knew Richaud's loved kids. He had a wheelbarrow he'd outfitted as a bus too, and sometimes on his routes he'd push neighborhood kids along in his wheelbarrow. They'd turn the steering wheel and they'd get to be the bus driver. It was a terrible thought for Lausanne to consider, but the hospital staff seemed to be acting like they were hiding a massive bombshell that would change everyone's views of Busman. Was it possible that Richaud's loved kids a little too much? When Richaud's was freed from his internment, he gave an interview in which he admitted to having come to blows with his grandma twice, but said that was long ago and wasn't why he was institutionalized. He denied the charges of being a kid diddler, but without the level of intensity that I feel like most people would deny what is effectively the ultimate allegation. It sort of sets off red flags to me when someone denies that allegation by saying, "I do like kids, platonically. I'm a child at heart." It makes me think of Michael Jackson.
Quant au problème des enfants, avec lesquels j'entretiens de très bons rapports, non pas sexuels comme certains pourraient le croire, ou veulent le laisser croire, mais des rapports qui sont tout à fait amicaux, et je dirais presque enfantins, parce que les enfants retrouvent chez moi un certain infantilisme, je ne sais plus exactement
vous
le terme.
Proche d'eux.
Je suis très proche d'eux, parce que le monde des adultes, parfois, me dégoûte. Le monde des adultes me fait peur parce que les adultes sont très souvent méchants entre eux. Les enfants sont naturels, vivent d'une manière tout à fait proche de la vraie, de la vérité, par exemple.
But ultimately, his relationship with the kids of Lausanne was just as wholesome as he made it sound. Police confirmed there were never any serious complaints surrounding Richaud's behavior with kids. It's just, sadly, an allegation that gets levied on anyone who is weird and, yes, childlike. Even as these rumors were circulating, Lausanne was still steadily backing their busman. Newspapers filled up with letters to the editor supporting him. There was only one recorded letter against busman, from a man who claimed he had been, quote, insulted and menaced by Richaud's and called him, quote, a great do-nothing, pampered and praised by the newspapers, the radio, and the TV. The guy didn't explain how he had been insulted and menaced, and it seemed like he was really just a stickler for conformity, morally outraged that the media was promoting this man's unconventional lifestyle. In America, I feel like there would be at least a minority of people who were mad at Richaud's living a government-supported life off disability checks, but in all the coverage of Richaud's period in the psych ward, which really was the talk of the town in French-speaking Switzerland in 1986, I couldn't find a single person even mentioning that important fact about his life. That aspect, at least, was totally uncontroversial to the Swiss. In fact, I for one would have supported the city of Lausanne giving him a bus driver's salary on top of his disability. I'm all for government-sponsored eccentrics. Every city should have one. In the past, village idiots sometimes collected a salary for entertaining the populace, though being a village idiot certainly wasn't a job. It meant someone in a pre-modern village who had a mental disability that prevented them from living a normal life, but was considered harmless and fun to have around. Martial Richaud's was certainly not an idiot. I would guess that he probably had an above-average IQ, but he clearly was an improvement to Lausanne's quality of life, and everyone knew it. Either way, Richaud's internment was over, thanks to the lawyer he and his grandma had hired, but there still wasn't much clarity on what had happened. Apparently, it had to do with his anger management issues. In the month before Richaud's commitment, psychologists said he had been having increasingly frequent and increasingly violent outbursts while on his bus routes, although some others disputed that, with his landlord saying he hadn't noticed any changes in behavior from Richaud's or heard any complaints from neighbors. Still, autistic rage is a big deal. If people in the street were making fun of him and provoked meltdowns, and that was happening on the regular, well, I certainly hope he got some help with that. Having a meltdown is the worst thing ever, and the things that can provoke one vary a lot, depending on the autistic person in question, but often aren't obvious. And it seems like he did get help. In fact, when Richaud's came back from the hospital, he wasn't all that bitter. He had initially resisted being committed and was happy that his lawyer got the court order that committed him repealed, but he came back believing he'd been well cared for. He said the psychologist had taught him anger management techniques and he had regained control over his life. Sadly, though, the period in the hospital had changed Richaud's in one notable way. In a TV news spot updating Lausanne on the fate of Busman, he announced he was retiring as a bus driver. The Musée d'Art Brut would take care of his carts. he would no longer walk around Lausanne on his scheduled route. It's not clear how badly he still wanted to do his routes. His voice is clearly tinged with regret, but from the way he talked about his decision to retire, which was the word he used, I get the sense that he had been pressured over a long period of time to stop doing the busman shtick and finally genuinely became convinced that that was what was best for him. While we still don't know the exact details of the violent altercations Richaud's had with passers-by that apparently got him institutionalized, doctors interviewed in the aftermath of L'Affaire Martial, as his controversial institutionalization is still known, said that their motive wasn't protecting the people of Lausanne from Busman, it was protecting Busman from the people of Lausanne. It's possible that there were people violently harassing him, and any punches he threw were in self-defense. Whether or not Richaud wanted to quit pushing his cart around, I believe that getting him to stop his routes was done in the name of helping him. Finally, some people began to say that getting Richaud's professional help had been justified, and people admitted that everyone involved in L'Affaire Martial, on both sides, believed that they were looking out for his best interest. Except maybe for that jerk who said he was insulted and menaced by Richaud's, and I think considering that guy was the only Lausannois to openly say he didn't like Busman, if he was insulted and menaced, it was for good reason. Richaud's seemed happy enough, even after his bus carts were in the museum, but that's the thing, he was only ever happy enough. Richaud's had always been more complicated than just a local class clown. There was a line in the original 1983 documentary that introduced him to the French-speaking world where he says,
"Ce que la société appelle ma folie, ce n'est autre qu'une souffrance terrible qui s'est transformée en dépression. La seule chose qui me maintient, c'est mes trolls."
That was sort of just brushed aside when this documentary first came out. He's so quirky, he even talks melodramatically about depression because he's French, but like Swiss French, so when he wanders sadly through the streets in his ennui, he's also simulating the functioning of an extremely efficient transit system. Don't we love him? But Richaud's needed help. He was devastatingly lonely. Before he was institutionalized, I guess he was only happy when he was pushing his bus cart, and it got him friends and near universal respect, but I suppose he wasn't safe as busman. It wasn't the best coping mechanism. I now know what it's like to be an awkward, autistic public figure with more fans than haters, like Busman, but the fact that I do have any haters at all, that I am public enough that people I don't know have opinions about me, is rough. I chose this path, just like Richaud's chose to be Busman, because ultimately, I like doing it, and becoming a successful YouTuber has made 2025 the best year of my life so far. But God, is it scary to know I can't really control my public image, and it'll just get even harder to do that from here. Even if 99% of the people who know me like me, what I focus on is the fact that there's a 1%. And I've said this before on this channel, and I'm really less concerned about this than I used to be, but in my darker moments, I wonder if the people who say they love me appreciate me as a human being, or fetishize me as an adorable little autistic man-child, a wholesome walking meme who must be protected at all costs, who lives in a different, softer world than the rest of us. I'm sure Martial Richaud spent a lot of time worrying about this exact thing. That's the flip side of being a lolcow, because that's what Martial Richaud ultimately was, a wholesome, beloved lolcow, but a lolcow nonetheless. You can be mentally ill and be a danger to yourself and others, but also, being mentally ill makes others more likely to be a danger to you. I've heard it claimed that people with schizophrenia are more likely to be victims of crime than perpetrators. I've also, A, seen debunkings of this factoid and I don't think it's true, and B, either way, Richaud's wasn't schizophrenic. But it's directionally correct. I think it's absolutely true for autistic people. When you're out of touch with reality, or make people think you're out of touch with reality, people take advantage of you. Busman never posed any threat to Lausanne, but maybe Lausanne posed a threat to him. A few months after Richaud's got out, one of the psychiatrists who had cared for him got him an extravagant gift, an actual trolley bus, donated free of charge by the Lausanne transit system. Richaud's had no place to park it at his small semi-basement apartment, so it was installed in the garden at the wealthy psychiatrist's house in the country. As far as I know, Richaud's never got a license to drive a car, let alone a bus. But when the bus was being brought out to the country, he got to mime driving it as it was being pulled along by a tow truck. In the news spot about obtaining the bus, Richaud seems to be, once again, happy enough. Maybe I'm reading into this too much, but there seems to be a sense of turning over a new leaf. One period of his life ending and another beginning. Just hanging out in his bus, listening to music or watching TV, sometimes turning the non-functioning steering wheel, seems to have replaced pushing his bus cart along the actual bus routes. Before, the street was real, but the bus wasn't. Now the bus is real, but the street isn't. Maybe that's an equal trade. Maybe getting him a whole bus was how the hospital convinced him to stop pushing his carts around. For the next 40 years, I'm not totally certain what happened to Busman. At some point, his grandmother died. I don't know when, even though I searched the death records in the Canton of Vaud, the state, province, region, something where Lausanne is, for the name Richaud's. It's possible that wasn't his grandma's last name. I don't really know anything about Richaud's family situation, but in interviews he implies that he was raised by his grandparents from a very young age, possibly his whole life. Either way, Richaud knew how to take care of himself after his grandma was gone, but he never really lived alone. He loved his doll Fabienne and referred to her as his wife, seemingly creating a decades-long happy domestic relationship for them. In an interview just a few years ago, he talks about his love for Fabienne, but also mentions in passing that he has a girlfriend named Emmanuelle. Was she a person? Another doll? Richaud was good-looking and easily had enough riz that he could have gotten a girlfriend. In the media coverage of him during his heyday, I get the sense that he simply doesn't want one because he's in love with Fabienne. Either way, he seems to have ended up happy. It's not too rare for autistic people to feel attraction to objects rather than people.
Mr. Treehorn treats objects like women, man.
There's a world-class archer, Erica Eiffel, who says she's married to the Eiffel Tower. It's an extension of the autistic urge to ascribe feelings to inanimate objects. I believe Erica Eiffel when she says she has a happy relationship with the Eiffel Tower. I believe Martial Richaud when he says he loved Fabienne. Is it weird? Yes. Is it hurting you? No. Richaud's neighbors understood that they didn't just live in any building in Lausanne, they lived in Busman's building, and it was their duty to be his friends and support network. I don't think he ever fully lived in his bus at his psychiatrist's estate, although that was offered to him. As far as I know, the closest thing he ever had to a real job was guarding the buses at a now-demolished bus depot in Lausanne, and I think this was just a sinecure that the Lausanne Transit Authority gave him because they liked him. I'm also not sure if this happened before or after he was institutionalized. A few times, Richaud was offered the chance to dress up in his old uniform and do his rounds again for interviews. Being busman in public was a closed chapter in his life, but he kept talking to the media, offering detailed thoughts about the nature of mental illness, what it means to be weird, and the beauty of ordinary things like trolleybus wires. He once said that what he'd done back in the 80s wasn't really that unusual. Everyone's got a route they follow in life. You build the things you want to take along on your route. Most of us do the same thing every day, and most of us find some level of joy in it. You get to a point where you're like a trolleybus, where you really can't get off your route. You have to keep following your wires where they take you. Maybe your route leads you into avoidable trouble. Maybe you still want to stick to it, even then. Martial Richaud died in Lausanne in summer 2024, at the age of 62, of an unspecified illness. Coincidentally, the day Caleb and I recorded the intro and outro skits for this episode in Philadelphia was 5 days before the one-year anniversary of his death. There's an award-winning comic book based on his life, and many documentaries, all in French. You can see his carts and his gorgeous geometric drawings of overhead wires at the Musée de l'Art Brut. He came to relish the consternation he provoked in people when they discovered that he was actually quite smart and could be grounded in reality when he chose to be. In one of his last interviews, he said, "In Switzerland, we love it when things are well categorized. So if you're crazy, you're crazy, and if you're not crazy, you're normal. So when there's a mix of the two, that becomes dangerous. If the madman suddenly becomes realistic and begins talking about theories that embarrass certain people, that bothers folks." At the beginning of this interview, he brags about how By having made a good life for himself without any job or education or money to his name, he's made himself a lot of enemies, quote, but never enough of them. But late in his life, I'm not sure he did have enemies. Sometimes I talk about how I want to be seen by the internet, how I worry about if my fans really see me as a human being as opposed to some adorable, autistic, manic pixie dream guy. Again, a wholesome, beloved lolcow, but a lolcow nonetheless, enjoyed but not truly seen. If you're worrying that you've portrayed me that way in the past, don't. The fact that you're worrying at all shows that you see me as a human being. But I know I'm not very normal, and I'm not sure I want to be treated like I'm normal. I have trouble articulating what I do want. Busman, I think, shows that it can be done, that you can be awkward and autistic and a funny local icon, but you can also be appreciated as an imperfect human being and viewed through every messy condition of the human experience. I think, at least to most of his admirers, Busman was truly seen.
I'm back in Philly now. It's still extremely hot. The heat almost killed my laptop. The heat killed my external hard drive to death. The heat has drained my lapel mic, so I'm just talking straight to my phone now. I'm here by myself again. Jollibee is off getting a cheesesteak, but I trust him. You know, we've talked things out, we've reconciled. He's not gonna harass other YouTubers now. I am in the depths of Suburban Station, a great big commuter rail terminal that is actually right in the center of the city. It's called Suburban because it exists so the commuters can get out to the suburbs from here. And here, there is a fascinating office called the Accessible Travel Center. In here, SEPTA, the transit authority for the Philly metro area, teaches people with disabilities, physical, cognitive, and both, how to navigate accessible transit. We've got mock-ups of bus seats, we've got an entire fake subway or regional rail platform with mock-ups of doors. This is the width of a regional train's doors. This is the width of a subway train's doors. There's the wheelchair ramp that the subway trains deploy. There's a realistic gap for people to mind. And over here, we have real fare gates where you can tap to pay. And an entire mock-up of a bus, an extremely realistic fake bus. It's got a destination board up here that you can barely see, but it's here. It's got another destination board here that you literally can't see. You just have to take my word for it that it's here. And inside, we got everything a real bus has. We got the fare box so that people can practice the admittedly very stressful, I think even if you're not disabled, process of, you know, coming in, paying for your bus ticket, you know, possibly with people waiting and the bus won't drive on until you've paid. This bus seems to be driving down like an interdimensional street in the Philadelphia Center City because we've got out the front windshield the art museum here, and then out this side window, that's the same street looking towards the art museum. Here on the floor, there are wheelchair hooks, which are something that I've noticed on buses and trains before, but since I don't use a wheelchair and don't closely know anyone who does, I never realized what these were for. And yeah, if I were to get in an accident and have to rely on a wheelchair, I still wouldn't know what these are for, which is why things like the Accessible Travel Center exist, to teach people who, you know, need to learn about these things, about these, you know, extremely non-obvious ways to navigate a world that isn't really built for them. This is the back of the bus. It's really only half a bus, but it's got real stop request cords you can pull. And it brings me back to the big question about this episode, a question that, as an autistic train geek myself, I've been asked a lot and I've just really never had a satisfactory answer for. Why do autistic people love trains? Why is that
such a common stereotype, both in fiction and, I mean, honestly, I would hardly even call it a stereotype because it is so often true. Why is that a thing? Well, here's Caleb from Classy Whale once again. Fancy meeting you in this fake bus.
I know.
Yeah. Well, Caleb made a video on exactly this subject not too long ago. Well, what are your thoughts? Because it's always, you know, it's genuinely been something that I've wondered about myself.
So I made a video a couple months back for Autism Acceptance Month, April, where I basically interviewed a bunch of people on my Discord and in my comment section who are autistic. Why do you like trains? What do you think is the connection between trains and autism? And a couple of the major themes that I picked up. First of all, a lot of autistic people really enjoy sort of things that are like systems, things that are very organized and very detailed, and trains just naturally fall into that. Lines, equipment, history, all that kind of stuff. Lots of information, lots of organization, a lot of sort of categorization. It combines with, you know, you're introduced to these things at a very early age with like Thomas the Tank Engine and other sorts of kids shows like that. It's a very normal, at least in the US, a very normal thing that you see every day or in a lot of places. Besides that, you know, trains run on a schedule. Yes, schedules can be late, but they're still within a system, within, like, you know, the train is going to come to this station, maybe it's going to be a few minutes late. And then there's also the sensory aspect of it, just the, you know, sometimes autistic people are very sensitive to sound or light or vibration, but there's also an element to which those things can be comforting if they're familiar. So one person I talked to kind of relates some anecdotes of like, and there's a train below us. We're still
there
in the fake bus.
We're in the fake bus. There are trains, like, you know, the platforms are right below the accessible travel center. There are trains, you know, just a few feet below this.
Feels like a little earthquake every 5 minutes.
Yep.
Anyways, there's people who might be overwhelmed by unpredictable sensory stuff, but at the same time would really seek out the sound of like a steam engine or a bus's, you know, a trolley bus's motors.
It's rhythmic. Like that. It's, you know, yeah. It's a positive sound.
And it's
sound.
Known. It's a known quantity. If there's any silver lining to the story of this episode, it's that transit agencies like SEPTA here in Philadelphia are really working hard to promote autism acceptance and really working hard to make sure that people who have autism and other conditions have the resources they need to approach the world of transit as riders, perhaps as enjoyers of transit, to learn the skills they need in a safe and controlled environment and promote accessibility, because fundamentally, transit should be for everyone.
Transit should be for everyone.
And on that note, I just got a text that your durian is currently squeezing Cheese Whiz onto a living cow. So you might want to deal with that.
All right. Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Caleb. I've had a great time in Philly. Now, yeah, time to take care of that.
So is this where I like drink from a little purple water bottle as music starts playing and there's like a circle that closes onto the screen? Some people who wanted to be in our video. Hello.
Hi. Hey. So my name is Michaela, and so what's the book?
You are.
My name is Tori.
Nice to meet you.
Welcome.
Welcome. Yeah. What's the YouTube channel?
Tori's Cabinet of Curiosities for me. Classy Whale for him.
So which one is gonna be on?
Like, this is gonna be a Tori's Cabinet of Curiosities video. And this is my co-host Jollibee the Durian. He's this spiky, stinky fruit that they got in Asia. I got this in China. He's plastic, but people think he's a real one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You too.
Welcome to Route 66.